and happy Easter. Now that in Isaac's words, he's got you all riled up for the sermon, you've got to sit there and be still. You don't have to. I know the kids won't, so you don't have to either. Jesus always said, be more like the children, so this is a good day for that. I know it doesn't look like Easter outside with this rain, but there is new life all around us, and I know we celebrate his resurrection every week, but it is good for us today of all days to remember that the tomb was empty, that this is a thing that really happened. I think it's tempting for us to kind of, in a way, mythologize some of the stories about Jesus. They live in this legendary category in our head, but today is a good day to remember that this story, this resurrection, it's all real, that this actually happened, that there were real people at a real tomb, and this is really real. Because this world is full of moments where that's not true, where the tombs do stay full, and the stones don't roll away. There are too many moments when something ends and the world just reshapes around that loss. Not all at once, not dramatically, but slowly, almost gently, until the things that once felt unthinkable become a new normal. We've gotten good in the last 6 years or so saying words like new normal. Moments when life begins to organize itself or reorganize itself around something that used to be there but is there no longer. We learn how to live in that kind of world. We learn how to carry absence, how to move forward when something important has been taken away from us. Over time, we come to accept certain truths, not because we want to, but because experience has taught us harshly that the things that are broken often stay broken, and the things that are lost often stay lost. What is gone does not come back, and eventually we begin to live as if that is simply how the world works. Maybe you learned it first when you let go of a balloon and it flew away, and maybe you felt it most recently when someone you loved has gone. Same lesson, different days. And eventually we begin to live as if that is simply how the world works. And that's not despair. It's not even necessarily hopelessness. It's just life. It's realism, the kind that comes from living long enough to know that there are some endings that we cannot undo, some doors that do not reopen, some stories that do not get another chapter. We know that this world works that way. And it's into this world that this story begins. The word of the Lord from John chapter 20, verses 1 through 18. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran. She went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They've taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." So then Peter and the other disciple set out and went toward the tomb, and the two were running together. But the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down to look in, and he saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. And then Simon Peter came following him and went into the tomb, and he saw the linen wrappings laying there, and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not laying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place all by itself. And then the other disciple, who reached the tomb first, also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture, that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples returned to their homes, but not Mary. Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. And as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she said to them, they've taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she just didn't know it was Jesus. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? What are you looking for?" And supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned around and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabuni," which means teacher. And Jesus said to her, "Do not touch me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." And Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. Nothing unfolds the way it should. The assumptions we carry into the story, the ones that feel so stable, so grounded in experience, begin to slip. Tombs don't become empty unless somebody has removed something from them. They just don't do that. Heavy stones don't move on their own. They just don't do that. When you lose someone, they don't come back 3 days later. Those are the rules. The world Mary knew is moving in a different direction. The world Mary is in is moving as though it just doesn't behave the right way. It doesn't stick to her expectations. Something is wrong. Something is off. And at first, she can't wrap her head around the possibility. It doesn't cross her mind. She's so convinced that Jesus is still dead that she just thinks somebody has stolen the body. She can't even muster the courage to look. But what's even more striking than what has changed in this story is what has not. There is no immediate clarity. She doesn't suddenly understand. There's no triumphant declaration. There's just a lot of confusion, a lot of misunderstanding. There's a sense that something has happened, but there's no way yet to name any of it, right? So John points this out to us. They see, they go into the tomb, they walk around, and they just don't understand it yet. They can't connect the dots. There's nobody in this story who really understands yet what has happened. Reality has shifted, but perception has not caught up. The world is different, but it does not yet look different. You would think that something like resurrection would be unmistakable, right? You would think that if it was you who showed up at the tomb and not Mary and not Peter or the other guy, if it was you who showed up at the tomb, that you would just automatically think, ah, yes, he is risen. It'd be obvious. It'd be impossible to miss. But if we're being honest, that's not how the story would ever unfold. You wouldn't assume resurrection. You would assume theft. You would assume robbery. You would assume anything besides resurrection, because resurrection has never happened at any funeral you've ever been to. Not once. If it has, please catch me after and tell me the story. I need to hear it. The world just doesn't work that way. But in this story, this time, this new thing that God is doing comes quietly into a world that still looks and feels the same. That was not Easter morning for Mary Magdalene. It wasn't Easter morning for Peter or the other guy. It wasn't Resurrection Day. It was gloomy. They were lost. And no one recognized it yet for something better. While it is still dark, God raises Jesus from the dead. Not as a symbol, not as an idea, not as a doctrine, not as a way of saying that hope lives on, not as something preachable, but as a real, decisive, world-changing act of God. He was dead, and then he wasn't. God raised him from the dead. It's not a continuation of an old story either. This is not the sequel. This is something new. What God does here is not a return to what was. He doesn't bring Jesus back to his old self. He doesn't restore life. This is not a reversal of crucifixion. The crucifixion still happened. This is not some way of God putting things back the way they used to be. It's transformation. It's a new creation breaking into a world that thought its story had already been written. And yet, and this I think is the surprise, it does not arrive with explanation. It does not come with arguments, does not come with proof or the force of recognition. It does not wait until everything makes sense. Jesus doesn't wait for the world to catch up to him. Instead, the risen Christ meets Mary exactly where she is in her grief, in her confusion, in the world as she understands it. He does not stand at a distance. He does not wait for her to figure it out. He calls her by name, Mary. And in that moment, everything changes. Recognition is not something she achieves. It's something that's given to her, something created for her by the one who's standing right there in front of her. She's so convinced that what's happening is impossible that she can look straight at him and not see him. The turning point of the story is not understanding what happened. It's an encounter. What was lost is not returned as it was. It's changed. It's transformed. Death has not simply been undone. It has been overcome. The limits of our understanding of how the world works no longer apply. The limits of the old world no longer define what is and is not possible. He is alive, and the world will no longer be the same. What happens next is just as important as what's already happened. Mary does not leave the garden with everything figured out. She still has no clue how. She can't explain it. She's just grateful. I guess this is the biblical equivalent of not looking the gift horse in the mouth. She doesn't need to understand how or why. She just is happy. She doesn't receive a full explanation of what God has done or how this new world is going to unfold. There are still all the questions, all the gaps. There's still everything left to understand, but something has changed. And whatever has changed is enough to move her. I need you to notice the motion in this story. Just real quick, a quick recap, because it matters deeply. Mary comes to the tomb but does not look inside. She stays at a distance. She sees the tomb is open, and she goes back with the assumption that somebody has broken in. She doesn't actually know. She hasn't looked in to see that he's actually gone yet. She hasn't gotten close enough. She just assumes he's gone. The other disciple gets there first before Peter, and he looks in but does not go in. He just gets close enough to see that it's empty, to confirm that it's actually empty. And then he leaves. Peter runs in and can't put on the brakes fast enough and goes inside the tomb to see that it's empty. And then he leaves. Mary is still standing at a great distance away for a long time. And even then, she only manages to look inside, to peek. She doesn't really go all the way in. She just looks enough to confirm her worst suspicions, and then she backs off again. That's where Mary is. She doesn't really move in this story from that place at a distance until she finally sees Jesus for who he is. And then that's enough to finally move Mary. She's called by name, and because of that, she goes. Not because she's ready, not because she understands it, not because she has clarity, but because she has encountered someone who was dead and is now alive. And that is enough to move her. That is the shape of this new life. It does not begin with certainty. It begins with encounter. It does not wait until everything makes sense. It moves because something has already happened. And that matters for us because, honestly, most of us are still waiting for things to make sense too. We don't understand it. We act like we do. We say the right words. But you can draw the math out however you want to on explaining atonement theories and how the resurrection functions, but honestly, nobody really gets it. It's above all of our pay grade. We're still waiting for things to make sense too. We tell ourselves that when we understand more, then we can trust better. If I have enough knowledge, then I can believe better. When we feel stronger, then we will move. When our questions are resolved, then we will believe. But this story, it moves us in the opposite direction. Mary does not move because everything is clear. She moves because Christ is alive. And that's enough. And that begins to show up in the ordinary places where we actually live. It shows up in the conversation that you've been avoiding because it feels easier to leave things as they are, to leave things in the tomb. It shows up in the situation that you've quietly decided will never change, where you've grown resigned with an empty, hollow place in your life. It shows up in the way that you carry disappointment, regret, grief, those things that settle in and start to feel just as permanent as death. We learn to build our lives around those graveyards. We learn to adjust to them, to stop expecting anything new there. But if Christ is risen, then even those places are not closed. Not necessarily fixed overnight, not suddenly easily resolved, but not final. The story is not finished, not as much as it feels. The movement of this new life does not always look dramatic. It may be as small as refusing to let despair have the last word in a place where it usually does. It may be choosing to stay present instead of withdrawing. It may be taking one step toward trust where you've been holding back or allowing hope to return, even cautiously, in a place where you'd given up on it. Not because you've got everything figured out or you know how it's going to work out. Not because you feel certain, but because something has already happened. Which means the question is not whether you can explain resurrection, or if you can prove it, or if you can resolve every doubt that comes with it. The question is so much more simple than that. What would it look like to take even one step to move out of that graveyard as if this whole thing was true? One step into hope where you've been expecting only loss. One step into trust where you've been holding back. One step into life where you thought the story had already ended. Not because you're certain, not because you've seen, but because Christ is risen. And that moment has changed forever what we think could be possible. The first witnesses did not prove that Christ was alive. They encountered him, and that was enough. They received what they did not expect. They were met before they understood. They were drawn into something that was happening before they understood what it was. And that is how we do resurrection life. They don't call it a leap of faith for no reason. This is a faith that moves because Christ is risen, because death is not final. The world is now full of possibilities that we thought were permanently closed. History has been full of these resurrection movements, haven't they? At once we thought it was impossible for people of different skin colors to love each other as equals. We thought that tomb was closed, but it wasn't. We are so ripe with assumptions of things that cannot change. And in every one of those assumptions stands someone we think is just a gardener, waiting for us to see the possibilities of new life where we thought it was never possible. We come to this table to receive what we do not expect. Where we meet without understanding, we're drawn into something that's already happening. And at this table, we don't have full clarity. We don't have perfect faith. We don't have every question answered, but we do move to this table with open hands. Because at this table, we do not solve the mystery of resurrection. Instead, we just receive the truth that new life began that morning. That the same Christ who stood in the garden, who spoke Mary's name, who is raised while it is still dark, meets us outside of our own tombs and our own cemeteries of things we've lost, waiting for us to see them, to see the possibilities, to see that resurrection isn't something that happens after death, it's something that happens in every moment of every day, where God rebuilds a broken, dead world around us. Because Christ is risen, and he meets us still. And what does that do to us? It moves us. It sends you out to announce, to proclaim, to declare, to try to tell somebody something unbelievable. I don't think Jesus ever actually had to tell the disciples to go out into all the world and share the good news. I think they couldn't help themselves but do that. There's no way that this story could have been contained. I think even if he had told them with his last words, "Do not tell anyone what has happened here," there's no way they would have done it. They would have gone out and told everyone. You can't contain something this amazing. So I need you all to hear one thing this Easter, if only just one thing. He really was raised. The assumptions you have about how this world works don't have to be true, because he really was raised. When the war seems permanent and unending, there is always hope of new life and peace. When the grief feels unending, there is really hope of new life and change. When it all feels too much, he's standing with you right there in the garden, I assume with a smirk on his face, waiting for you to figure it out. I assume when he called Mary's name, he did it with some bit of laughter, because he was so excited to see her figure it out. And he's waiting the same way for all of us, just for one second, to have enough courage to look in the tomb and see that it's not nearly as full as we thought it was. So come to the table this morning, not to celebrate a full tomb, full of grief and mourning and sadness and loss. Come to the table this morning to celebrate an empty tomb, new life. Christ is risen. Let's stand and sing.
He is Lord.